The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Shane Stapleton back with you this week, along with Declan Martin from Ladbrokes.
How's it going?
Declan, good. Brendan Flynn, how are you? Bernard Flynn. Jeez, Brendan, what's wrong with me?
It's okay, Sean. It's okay, Sean.
I have no regrets. And Rob Hines.
How you doing, Sean?
How are you? Are you well?
Got my name right. Thank you very much.
Bernard, do you think I'd get yours right? Of all people.
Shane, I've been called everything with B, so I don't give a shit.
So you silenced the B word and then said the S word out loud.
I promise you. That's one of the nicer things I've been called in my time, Brendan.
Mir, this Marcelo Bielsa thing, whereby he's spying on every team this year, it's unethical, I suppose, but it's not illegal. And he came out and did a massive press conference and presentation of their spying and their analysis of Derby County, who are ran by Frank Lampard. It was incredible stuff. Bernard, have you ever seen the bait of it in GA?
Well, just to deal, I know of a lot of spying that did go on, and it still goes on.
And we're not talking about Donegal and Kerry in 2014, the man in the tree and all that.
No, but it's, without a shadow of a doubt, it went on and has and still goes on quite a bit in the GA. There's managements out there who have allocated certain friends and single personnel to go to other counties. I know for a fact, I know two or three guys that do it. But this was on a different scale. I thought it's the most refreshing thing I've ever seen in the Premiership. I thought he was brilliant. And to quote Sky, have you seen the conference yet? A masterclass in coaching is what the reporter who attended the press conference. Mm. That's what he said. And I just thought his honesty, the first night he was interviewed, I was watching it because I watched the game. And to listen to Lampard and all that, and then your man to be so, Belsa, to be so honest and upfront, I thought it was genius stuff.
Without apologising.
Without apologising.
Made it very clear he wasn't apologising.
And you know what? He'll keep doing it. He's no regrets. And until there's a law brought in, you won't stop him. But he's been brilliant. They gave them a lesson in football after.
It's a funny middle ground, isn't it? Because you have opposition scouts. That's a thing. You scout the opposition. You see what formations are playing. So that's the basis behind what he's doing. But also, there has to be a safety concern at some point if he has utensils for breaking into the training grounds.
Yeah.
There's a kind of foggy middle ground there.
Has there to be a line?
I'd love if there wasn't, and we could just get spies on each team, and every team could have a go at this. I think that would be great.
I think it's just his complete attention to detail, and I think it's a European thing more than it doesn't go on in England. It doesn't go on in the UK.
How much is promotion worth? Like the promotion is worth something like 70 million or something
huge,
like that.
Yeah.
So of course you'd put this into spying if you were able to get away with it.
The win at all costs thing is very Argentinian. The way English media and I suppose managers and stuff like that have reacted is very old school English. There's a great book by Jonathan Wilson on Argentinian football and the English over there and how they felt it was supposed to be played more gentlemanly. The English game, football over there, the Argentinians took it as their own and didn't play anywhere near that kind of gentlemanly football.
Don't they also love in Argentina that it's great if we beat you, but if we beat you by cheating, it's even better again. I think
he was the manager of Bilbao, he played Barcelona, and apparently Pep said to him after the game, "You know my team better than you." And Barcelona still bet them 2-0.
Yeah.
But that such was his attention to detail.
And it should be said, Pep loves him. Pep has talked about him being one of his greatest influences ever. But he is also absolutely mad.
And another brilliant story I was reading this morning: when he became Leeds manager, he asked how much the average person in Leeds would have to walk, how long they'd have to walk to afford a ticket for a match. And someone came up with it. It's 3 hours. So we made all the players go around the training ground picking up litter for 3 hours.
Bielsa resigned after 2 days of being a Lazio manager before.
He resigned, was it one game into his second season at Lille? And he said his work here was done. One game into the second season.
Do you know Trapattoni, when he took over at Ireland, the first thing he did was put up this hoarding so people couldn't actually spy on the team. No. To be honest, there's not too much to figure out with the Ireland soccer team.
No.
But that's what he did. Exactly. What are Leeds to get into the Premier League, odds-wise?
Well, they're even money favourites to win outright. For promotion,
he'll
get them at about 2-7.
He hasn't cheated.
He hasn't actually cheated.
But I tell you a great one, Shane. You'd like this. And I've never said this publicly anywhere before.
Yes.
We played Dublin. We used to play Dublin a lot from around the mid-80s to early 90s, whatever. A good bit. League, Championship, all that. And my dad used to go up, button his jacket up, cover himself up completely, and get into the Dublin training, right? I thought it was brilliant.
Spygate.
He did.
This happens everywhere, though. It does happen everywhere.
And he used to come back and tell me everything. He'd take little notes, the whole lot. Now, that was back then.
Was it helpful?
couple of times it was helpful. Who might be going corner back, who wing back, a couple of little changes. Now, I'm not going to make a big thing of it now, but back then I thought it was brilliant. And I was a son and I was playing, and he'd tell me how they were going, this, that, and the other the time, and different things. And I remember chatting to Sean Boyle a couple of times about a couple of things he said. Now, I'm just saying, he was, did anyone really care? I don't know. But you couldn't get into the Dublin training that easy, if you like. Now, it's only a small thing when I think back now. I haven't thought about it for years. But when you look at this guy, I think it's brilliant. And anyone thinks it's not going on all over England for years, they're caught themselves.
The likes of John Walters even got on Twitter and said, fair play for coming out and saying that there's much worse stories about it. And there is, like, all throughout football. Actually, wasn't there one in Italy? I think it was Perugia. Perugia jumped off the top of my head, where there was a guy in camo gear caught up a tree spining down onto another team's training.
That might solve our Donegal Kerry thing.
Because they're playing Stoke this weekend, and obviously the new Stoke manager's come from Luton, he's only been in charge of two games, he's spent a lot of time watching Luton games. So if that's such a attention to detail is, because he obviously thinks
Did you see the piece in Sky, and just something different, did you see the work ethic he has introduced and the amount of time and preparation the players have to go through their own separate video analysis? They're in the rooms watching VT, the coach, the work rate, he's changed the club on its head. He's getting ready for the Premiership.
He doesn't give a damn
how he gets there.
Nathan Jones is the name of that Stoke manager. The beauty of Bielsa is, like you were saying, Bernard, he was so brazen and just threw all the information out straight away. So you can stop talking, there it is. Yeah. And it kind of makes you go, right, fair enough. And it reminded me of Pat Lam when he was leaving as Connacht manager, and we all knew he was leaving for a bigger wage packet, and he just came out and said, yeah, I'm just securing the future of my family. Yeah. Yeah. And that makes you... You can't really call him greedy anymore, because you're just like, well, fair enough, I'd probably do the same myself.
Bielsa should have said, I'm securing my Leeds family's future and the whole Leeds fans.
It's one of those situations where it leaves you nowhere to go, because he's just so blatantly admitted it. You're like, all right, fair enough, he's called the space.
And I can tell you,
a couple of years ago, I was called out on why I had done nothing to help Mead or coach, manage Mead in Mead sort of circles.
You're a disgrace.
And I straight up said it live on air. I had three kids to get through college. I had lost my business, and I made no apology. I was doing what I was doing because it was a means to an end, and that was it. And I was honest, and that was the end of it.
No one said a word after that. How could they?
Because it was the truth.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at some Premier League this weekend. Arsenal versus Chelsea is probably the biggest one, but we'll just start off with Man United against Brighton, 6th against 13th. Solskjaer is looking to become the first Man United manager to win 6 league matches in a row at the start. I almost want them to lose just so I can stop calling out these stats. But Declan, what price are they to win?
2-7 for Manchester United in this one, 17-4 with the draw and 10-1. So there's a bit of that feeling that the feared Manchester United are back here with betting as it is. Should be said as well, we all talked a little bit about that game last week and what kind of Man United team would show up. I'd say I thought they were incapable of
against Spurs.
Yeah, I thought they were incapable of maybe having a solid defensive team. And I know De Gea made an absolute bundle of saves, but you have to say about United, they defended well for the most part. They kept Spurs out somewhat, and they were really, really impressive.
All these amazing saves that hit him on the leg.
Are they as amazing as people are saying?
Can you think of it? You look at the first two games he's had. He's had Cardiff, Huddersfield, Bournemouth, Newcastle and Reading in the Cup, and then Spurs. Like, the first five of them, if you could have handpicked the matches, they're the games you would have picked.
But Jose would have struggled through them.
Yeah, true. And Brighton have bet them earlier in the season, so I think this will be a good marker to see.
If you could have looked at that Spurs team and said, how are we going to beat them, you would have picked exactly how he played with, and I did actually say it, I'm not sure on the show, but I certainly said it with a couple of Ladbrokes and the lads in Ladbrokes' office, that the only way they're going to beat them is if De Gea has an absolute wonder game. Now, he did, but everything went right. You take that Pogba pass for Rashford. He's put Rashford in that area of the pitch going, get up there. Pogba's going to sort of old school Gerrard to Michael Owen. Michael Owen scored those goals time and time again. They set up defensively and hit him with those. It was really good job. So I think for that, Manchester United have to be looking pretty positive. They're level on points now with Arsenal as well. So
does it make some difference when you put the right players in the right positions, Bernard?
But when you've a person that actually, and you only see what Mourinho was at, you could see him, anyone could see, it was simple to do what Solskjaer has done. Is he got, okay, the vibes and the whole enthusiasm and the air of fun and relaxing and all that. But he's basically done a few things that we were talking in this show about 10 times the last 6 months. And he refused to do, he was fighting with himself. But what I would say is that I said strongly here last week that The game for Solskjaer and Pochettino was a massive game. I didn't think that they would actually do it, but I said if he has a massive performance and he beats you, I think it's put him in pole position. Mm-hmm. Unless there's a disaster, he's going to get the job now. And if they were beaten and beaten well by Spurs, and Pochettino was, I won't say he was being a little bit of a blackguard now a couple of weeks beforehand. I don't think he thought they would be beaten the way they were last week, and I think it's a big blow for him.
Do you think, okay, so the importance of getting a different manager in who creates a different environment. When you were with Meath, it was with Sean Boylan the whole time. But you would have had a different club manager, you would have had, you'd have been involved in management teams since. How important is it to be a good man manager, and can it transform a team? You're showing me your phone there.
No, just as we're speaking, he actually rang me there, a missed call.
Sean Boylan.
I found myself at work just looking at that, just there now. And as you're speaking, I had only one manager for 12 years. And I had Judy McGee and the compromise rules and, you know, club managers and all that and everything. But Sean Boylan, he was the most incredible man manager and I think only in time, nobody, Mick O'Dwyer was quite good, but man manager and the way he dealt with players and issues and things like that, and the atmosphere and what he created and changed it up, mixed it up and all that, he was a genius. I mean a genius.
And that's the environment he created,
yes,
is it?
Yes, absolutely, Shane. No. And with two teams, with our team and then with the 96-99 team. The fun, the smile on the face, everything about it, and all of us that played with him, whether he won or lost, that's what he had and that's what how good he was. And the environment, and I think you have to create that environment for players. Mourinho got it so wrong at United. Don't get me wrong, I cannot believe how, to the extent he got it so wrong. And I don't know what he was at, because it was stupidity. Was he well fully? I'm not sure, because you couldn't do some of the stuff he did. You couldn't make it up. And I think Solskjaer has picked his battles very well. He said, "I'll change." They're all laughing. Everything you see is fun.
It is still early days, though.
It's early days.
I mean, he's yet to fall out with a player.
But they're going to have to make a manager. They're going to make a call on a manager pretty soon. I think the last week's match was massive.
I think Ferguson is having a massive say as well. Like, I think this whole thing, he's reintroduced the players have to wear their suits now to away games, whereas under Mourinho, they could wear their small little things like this. Ferguson is having a huge impact there in the background. But yeah, it's early days. Like, if they lose to Arsenal in the FA Cup next week, all of a sudden, then it's a completely different.
Top four is their odds on that. Don't rule it out.
Well, just before you get to that, Paul Pogba can become only the second United player to score at least twice in three consecutive Premier League home matches. The other one, as you'd expect, is Cristiano Ronaldo. So his form is absolutely transformed. Brighton are looking for their first Premier League away points against one of last season's top six at the ninth attempt. So they're normally cannon fodder for these games.
Away, yeah. They're quite good at home. Like, they've had some good results against the big teams at home. Yeah, but I'd say they'd probably win this. We talked
a little bit about this last week when they were playing Liverpool and how tough they are to beat. So you wouldn't see it being an absolute demolition job. Mm. But I mean, still, they've only lost, I think I said it to you last week, they've only lost four games away by more than one goal this season. So
United to nil.
I actually have that written down here, yeah. Bernard, as one of the standout bets in this. Yeah. 21-10. So you're getting over 2-1. When you consider Manchester United are fairly short in the betting. I think I said 2-7 is. Another one for you, Manchester United to win both halves at 15-8. But I'm with Bernard. I think Man United to win to nil there, 21-10.
I think that's what you're looking at. United to win to nil or United to win by exactly one goal. That's the sort of game it'll be. You wouldn't be touching them now at 2-7. It's a bit.
I should point out as well, for a top four finish, they're 2-1.
I wonder what price that was before Mourinho.
It would have been a lot bigger. I think we talked maybe closer to tens.
Yeah,
they're still 6 points off Chelsea, who are in fourth position. And speaking of Chelsea, they're visiting Arsenal this weekend, who are also 6 points off them, fifth against fourth. Arsenal scored 20 goals in their last seven Premier League London derbies, which is twice as many as any other side. So in as much as they've fallen away a little bit after that really long unbeaten run, would you give them a chance here, Rob?
Well, yeah, I think the game between them earlier in the season was a 3-2 to Chelsea. I mean, you're probably looking at a similar sort of scoreline here. I think Arsenal definitely have a chance, but I think, you know, Higuain could perhaps make his debut if he's brought in.
Will they throw him in this quickly?
Don't know. I was reading a report today that he might do. His record under Sarri is incredible. I think he played one season with Napoli in Serie A, and he scored 36 goals in 35 matches.
And that was the highest ever in Serie A history as well. Mm.
That's incredible.
When he was at Real Madrid, was he ever that impressive?
No, but to be fair, he has been since for Napoli and briefly for Juventus. Not worked out in Milan, and a lot of stuff not working out in Milan, to be fair. I wonder how he fits into this Chelsea team. Obviously, Sarri likes a player like him. Had it noted down here to talk about how little Sarri likes a big striker. He doesn't fancy Morata, Giroud. He didn't fancy Milik at Napoli after they'd lost Higuain and had no other strikers. So he'd rather basically play his ideal sort of poaching type striker or a false nine. I think Chelsea are a funny team this year as well. Did you see the stat on Match of the Day about their defenders and Jorginho as well? I think it was like sort of record of passing in the Premier League without any assists. So they've essentially got five players, the four at the back and the guy sitting just in front of the back four.
Jorginho.
With zero assists. Yeah, Jorginho has the most passes in the league without an assist.
Higuain was playing in the Supercoppa final. Juventus beating Milan 1-0 during the week. He came on, I think, for the last 20 minutes.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just, it's ridiculous. Like you think of the Supercoppa America final, the South American Champions League final being on in Madrid. Well, obviously that was due to fan trouble. They had to bring it out of there. But, you know, everything's for sale these days, isn't it?
I think it's only a matter of time before you see perhaps the charity shield or something like that moved around.
But if Higuain's playing Wednesday night in the Middle East, is he going to be rushed in for a match against Arsenal?
He probably won't start. He might get an introduction.
The deal might not even happen.
It does look like it's agreed. It's just really a case of being.
Meanwhile, Olivier Giroud could become the second player to score for both Arsenal and Chelsea when they've met each other, other than. Cesc Fabregas.
Oh yeah, I was trying to figure out who it would be. Who's only just departed himself.
That's for Monaco, yeah.
Monaco.
15-8 Arsenal, 5-2 to draw, and 13-10 Chelsea. So it's an open game in the betting.
Arsenal are a big price for being at home, aren't they?
They are. Their run is so poor, though. I mean, they've lost to Arsenal. Arsenal have lost to Southampton, Brighton, Liverpool, and West Ham in their last six, seven games, maybe. Yeah. Do you know what? I think there's a couple of interesting bets here. Draw both teams to score is pretty big, 16-5. So draw both teams to score 16-5. And something like, we talk time and time again, Arsenal are poor in the first half of nearly every game this season. It's a mad stat that's still going. But Chelsea, to have the lead at halftime and fail to win, is at 9-1. So that could be Arsenal to come back and draw, Arsenal to go on to win it. But Chelsea to lead halftime and fail to win is at 9-1.
I definitely think both teams will score. And I think the bet for me is probably Chelsea to win both teams to score. I think it's 29-10.
Will we see Mesut Ozil? Seems to have fallen a bit out of favour.
Certainly not. He seems keen to kick him out, Emery, I think.
When you think, you know, Aaron Ramsey's probably going to go to Juventus, Mesut Ozil, what's happening there, especially when they're probably struggling to create chances in the last while. And the guy who's supposed to identify their talent, Sven Mislintat, as well, looking like he's leaving as well. Those sort of blue sky days at Arsenal seem to be fading quickly.
Yeah, there's no mention of them signing anyone either. Like
They're a team that look like right now they could use a couple of players in because of the likes of Ramsey. And you could get someone in now and start to bed them in. It should be said as well, just on Arsenal, for a transition season, it's not been too bad so far. And that is what it has to be viewed on. Everyone's
kind of great start.
People are getting carried away, I think, by the start. But realistically, if they can challenge and get close to top four, that's where they should be at the moment.
But they've Arsenal in the, or sorry, they've United in the cup next, that's and then Man City in the league.
Ozil's on £15 million a year. It's obscene.
Yeah.
And if you look at the end of with Wenger and that there, he's done nothing really to lift the club for one of their so-called more experienced leaders. I mean, they should offload him.
Just before we move away from Chelsea, actually, I should point out we've got the Carabao Cup, the second leg of that semi-final coming up on the Tuesday, so it'll be before we record the next. So just a quick look at the match betting for that. 3-4 Chelsea, 13-5 the draw, 7-2 Spurs. So potential first final for Spurs if they can kick on. I don't think 7-2 about Spurs is too bad a price, actually. No, considering
bad,
Chelsea have a big Harry Kane, big game.
Harry Kane and Son has gone as well, so where are the goals going to come from?
Yeah, they'll have to find someone to come in and deputise.
Troy Parrott, because it's not going to be Vincent Janssen.
Or Llorente, maybe.
Vincent Janssen hardly kicked the ball out of his way.
Yeah.
The way he's been going the last season and a half. I think he has one goal in the last season and a half or something, and it's very few appearances because of that. Moving on to Liverpool against Crystal Palace, first against 14th. Very interesting with Palace that they've won three of their last four visits to Liverpool in the league. Now they did lose the last one, but they're a very good away team. They're looking to win a third successive away Premier League game.
Jesus, yeah, but I think that tells you probably a bit of a Liverpool, the old Liverpool compared to what we're seeing this year.
Yeah.
You know, I think at home you'd expect Liverpool to win this one. If they're going to really go close to winning the league, they have to be Crystal Palace.
But do you not worry about Trent Alexander-Arnold being out, Dejan Lovren's out, Joe Gomez, Joel Matip?
They have a massive defensive problem.
Sold Klein as well on top of that.
Yeah, yeah. Is he on loan? I think he's on loan to Bournemouth, Klein.
But I mean, they're that good going forward. Like, surely you can still get by.
But they're that good going forward against Brighton, and they only got one goal now. And I know you said, Declan, that Brighton don't normally concede that many goals, no matter who they're against. But still, in all, with that attacking weaponry, you know, is it a chance that they might need more than one goal here, and can they get it?
Yeah, I could see that happening. I mean, the betting kind of shows you how highly Liverpool expected, or how much in control Liverpool expected to be for this game. You've got 1-5 Liverpool, 11-2 the draw, and 16-1 about Crystal Palace. So it's really, really big price. I don't think that's
you wouldn't have got that price like 2 years ago.
And I don't think it's a fair indication of this either. I don't think it's a fair indication. I know Palace have been poor. I think what it kind of more attests to is, you know, a bit like Liverpool Brighton last week, you know how this game is going to go down. Liverpool are going to control the game. Palace are going to try and counter attack with the likes of Zaha and Townsend. But, well, Townsend if he fancies it. But I can't see a counter attacking team catching Liverpool out as much. They don't tend to be caught on the break as much these days, do they?
I think Liverpool will win this. Like, they're 1-5. I wouldn't be backing them. At 1-5, I wouldn't be backing them -1. I think it could be a scrape through affair, but I think they'll get by.
Make a case for Palace then. If Fabinho starts centre back, I'd say we'd all reckon that's going to happen given the injury issues at the moment.
Yeah. And Milner right back, maybe?
Yeah, and he started there last week, Fabinho, and did fine against Brighton. But if you were Zaha, surely you're going to stand on Fabinho the whole game, stand on his side, away from Van Dijk, and look for a ball to be slipped through behind. Because he has the pace. Like, he's a top four type player, I would suggest.
Yeah.
So he is a player that could nick a goal, especially on the break.
Yeah, I just think with how Liverpool play at the moment, they're less likely to be caught on the break, and that pretty much blunts a lot of what Crystal Palace are good at. It really will be a tough game for them. I think you can see, we talked about it again last week against Brighton, half-time draw, full-time Liverpool, 14-5. When you consider the 1-5 price in the match betting, 14-5 is a huge price for a game like that.
Looking at it here again, like the match odds, both teams to score, if you do fancy Palace to make a goal, Liverpool 2-1. It's a lot better than 1-5.
Liverpool to win and both to score.
2-1.
There you go. Liverpool are looking to win a 7th consecutive Premier League home match for the first time since, 5 years ago, January 2014. I presume that would have been Brendan Rodgers' territory.
Gerrard threw the league title away, just like he will again for Brendan Rodgers.
Oh, you hate Gerrard then, do you?
We were discussing. He does. He's a massive Celtic fan, and Gerrard has after likes Defoe and Davies. He's getting players in that he can't get in Celtic. That's what's.
Is Yaya Touré going to happen?
I don't know. I honestly thought when I heard it first, I said this is just the usual January nonsense that happens every year at Celtic. But he seemed the other night on Sky, he sort of hinted that it could happen if you know he's sort of waiting for the call and he wants to talk.
Can you Rogers, hold off till Marnock though?
Rogers is gone, in my opinion. This is last season, I would say.
Could be. He might have missed a big move already, I would have said.
There'll be loads of them next year in the Premiership, I think.
Could we shoehorn in a brief mention for good old Rio Ferdinand, fellow BT pundit of Stephen Gerrard?
Did you see the whole lot of that piece?
Defending Mike Ashley?
Yeah.
Who puts his clothing line out there?
Is he still working with Rangers, Mike Ashley? So it might be.
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. There's your armoury to.
Yeah, but Ferdinand to say he hardly knows the man.
Hey, do you think Celtic will win the title? They're level on top with Rangers, 42 points, with a game in hand, and then Kilmarnock are 1 point behind then.
I think they will, yeah. Like, the next Celtic Rangers game is going to be huge. It's the end of March, it's at Celtic Park, and then you'll obviously have one just after the split. It'll probably be the fourth game in the split, fourth or second game. So, like, I think it could come down to them. I just think people are saying it's great to have a title race and all that. The thing about it is both of them have been so inconsistent this year. Like, both of them have dropped points, like, where they shouldn't have dropped points. And if it wasn't for that, I think, you know.
Should be said for any non-Celtic fans out there, 3-1 Rangers doesn't look the worst bet at this point.
For the title?
Yeah.
It's a great bet.
And like, even Aberdeen in fourth are only 3 points behind, and Hearts are 6 points behind in fifth. I mean, most people no longer pay attention to the SPL, but this seems as exciting a season as you get.
The betting would cut you off there ago. Kilmarnock are 50-1 and Aberdeen are 66-1.
Third place Kilmarnock, a point behind, are 50-1.
While Rangers are 3-1, so there you go.
It's sort of strange as well, because with this whole winter break they've sort of had in Scotland the last few years, they've a ton of matches in like December, and then they've a ton of matches when they come back sort of end of January, start of February. Whereas like Celtic Rangers are going to be playing 3 times a week for a couple of weeks in December. I just think, what is the point of giving him the 3 weeks?
I like Gerard, what he's been. I like his press conference, just only what I've listened. I think he's. There's something about him as a manager. I really do. I think he's in for the long haul.
Let's move on to the rugby then. This weekend, all four provinces in Ireland can reach the quarterfinals of their European competitions if they win. Munster, Exeter, Wasps, Leinster, and then you have Ulster away to Leicester and God, it's after a slip in my mind who Connacht are playing this weekend. We'll come back to that shortly, though.
They're in another competition. I wouldn't worry about that as much. Yeah.
Challenge Cup.
Munster against Exeter. So it'd actually be the 18th time in 21 seasons that Munster would have got through to the knockout. So, you know, in anyone man's language, that is highly impressive. Almost a Wenger-type statistic if they hadn't actually won the competition twice. So you have to give Munster props for that.
Yeah, you will say compared to last year as well. I think we may have talked about this before. Last year, Munster got to the semi-finals and were unbelievably lucky to do so. I don't think many Munster fans would even contest that, that when they played, was it Racing in that quarterfinal or semi-final game? Unbelievable that they managed to get through it. This year, though, they are looking far more the finished article. Yeah. Getting very close to looking a proper out-and-out team. And I would have said, start of the year, they having a chance in Europe. But now it's more, it's kind of closer into that region where if things go their way, they could be in with a chance.
We were brilliant last weekend, Munster.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Absolutely superb. And Carberry, I think he really arrived on the stage. What, 26 points?
26 points against Gloucester,
he was super. I thought he was super.
On our offer, actually, I should point that out as well, because we have an offer for this game. Double odds if you're winning first try, score goes on to score another try. And Carberry did that just that last week, so he had a lovely bit of value on him in the well into the double figures if you'd have followed them in.
I have to remember they're Connacht are going to Bordeaux this weekend as well for those interested in that game. Yeah, Munster, like, they've been excellent half-back partnership now with Carberry and Murray, and imagine when they get 10 or 20 games together how good they'll be. And even in the pack as well, a lot of people are talking about Tadhg Byrne and John Klein, who's going to qualify for Ireland in a few months' time. Exeter hammered Cast, who are the French champions, 34-12 last week, and they've never won three European games in a row, which they're looking to do, and they actually lost their first three games, so it'd be incredible if they got through at this point. So what sort of odds are they giving them?
You're looking at, actually I was looking at some outright Heineken Cup markets here, so I will just pull that up for you in a moment. 1-3 Munster, 25-1 the draw, and 12-5 for Exeter, with about 6 points in the handicap for that game. So Munster minus 6, 10-11, Exeter what? Plus 6, 10-11.
What do you reckon, Bernard? Minus 6?
I'm very impressed. Minus 6, you see the handicap even last, Munster really shouldn't have done what they did to Gloucester.
To Gloucester, yeah.
I mean, Gloucester actually starting to go quite well, getting racked together. Young Henry Walker, I said before, I know him quite well, and his dad, my good friends of mine, he played for 70 minutes. When I was speaking to a few of them over there, they were so impressed with Munster. I think Exeter, they grind out results, they're gritty, they're hard to beat. I think Munster will definitely win by more than 6 points.
Jack Knowles coming back into that Exeter team as well. His try against Castro was brilliant.
Brilliant.
And he'll be a big huge danger. But we mentioned quite a few players. Chris Farrell coming back into that Munster team. They look now a strong 15.
Yeah.
Like, where you looked at Munster before, you went him. They all weaken that team significantly. You wouldn't say that about any player in that starting 15. Maybe the options off the bench aren't as strong. But they do look really good. I'd fancy them to get past that 6 points. This game is live as well, actually, on Virgin Media. So you can catch that if you're, rather than trying to get out and watch it in the pub, you can catch it at home. So yeah, follow that in.
Always better, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Munster to beat the handicap, I think, is a great bet.
6 points in the handicap now.
Leinster away to Wasps this weekend as well, Sunday at 3:15. Hugely important for Leinster in the sense of trying to get a home quarter final here. There's still a set of a permutation out there whereby they mightn't even qualify, but I'd say we all expect them to qualify. But like those home quarterfinals, just like in the NFL, which we'll come to in a little while, having home advantage is huge. John Fogarty, the scrum coach, was saying it's going to be a great game. They've got Jake Cooper, Woolley, Joe Launchbury and Nathan Hughes in their pack. And like, if you think about it, Leinster don't have Johnny Sexton as well. They have Ross Byrne, who has not made the Ireland squad.
I was shocked at that announcement.
I can't say I was. I think he's been relatively disappointing, actually, the last couple of games. He would have played a fair bit recently with Sexton's injury, with Pro 14 games. I don't think he's been terrible, but I think he's been below the level. I think Carberry improving massively has maybe dented his confidence a bit, but
Jack Carty's
been absolutely magnificent, it should be said, and I would say on form definitely deserves to be in there.
Is it a case of Carty is brought in just to give him experience, and that doesn't necessarily mean Ross Byrne is out of the picture for the World Cup?
Well, Joe Smith, his comment was it was a dreadfully tight call. So if it was a month, 6 weeks ago, there's no doubt Byrne would have been in there, there's no doubt. But I thought Leinster grafted really well. If you consider all the players who were missing last weekend, I thought it was a really good, strong team performance. I'd love Munster and Leinster to meet, if they could meet And if you look in the back of the perform or the match, and Declan was talking about, was critical of it a few weeks ago, of how nasty it was. Can you imagine Leinster and Munster meeting now, with Leinster probably at the strongest they've been for a number of years, and Leinster getting the big players back? That would be one of the games of the year, there's no question about it.
Actually, speaking of the strength of Leinster, Dai Young, who's over Wasps, he was referring to the difference between how the provinces can manage their players, and Ireland, of course, as well, versus the attritional Premiership. And he goes, when we pick up injuries, we're not replacing internationals with internationals, with internationals behind them as well. Look at Leinster last weekend. They had five British Lions, yes, he called them British Lions, out injured, and they still had 15 internationals on the field. They've got that strength and depth.
You see, it's a country divided, well, it's divided by four, if you like, Ulster, Munster, Connacht and Leinster. But
with Leinster propping up all the
provinces. Yeah, but Leinster 58 professionals, 57, 58 professionals.
Yeah.
I mean, the English, and people don't realise, a lot of the English rugby clubs are under serious financial pressure. Leinster, they're not actually... Mm-hmm.
Salary caps and stuff.
So it's huge. But if you look at, and I've said this strongly on the show, last year, in the last year and a half, the way the Irish players are minded, the way the workload that is, the way it's controlled and monitored, Schmidt at the very top is overseeing that, and he has a handle on all of that. But the way that, if you look at the internationals, and he's right, Young is actually 100% correct, I'm flabbergasted at Leinster and the risk and how they can do it and have so many good players to back these guys up. If you look at the average amount of games a Leinster player, who's a Leinster rugby player and an Irish international, average the games they actually play a year. Write down the games for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Mm. When the Rugby Cup year, are they averaging any more than 6, 7, 8 games for Leinster?
Well, they're definitely been minded massively. Totally. Like Sexton, Kearney, you don't see them that often in blue.
It should be said as well, just when you're talking about players getting into that Ireland team, say the likes of Jack Carty, getting in there on merit because they're playing. Take what Schmidt has done, moving the likes of Jordy Murphy, and he's not necessarily saying
and
I've
Carberry.
Moved,
he moved Carberry,
yeah,
as well.
Essentially moved Carberry, Jordy Murphy, all these players who are options who are playing all the time, and the likes of Ross Byrne will probably have to look at that and go, you know, I'm playing a bit in the Pro 14 against some Italian teams and some of the weaker Welsh sides or whatever, but essentially it's the players who are playing frequently against top opposition and playing well who are getting picked. And as you said, Schmidt is minding them in a way that it's working out very, very well for Ireland.
Just one point change. It's only something for our listeners maybe to actually... In the English Premiership, the average wage of those Leinster players... Okay, the top internationals and all that. But the average wage of 30, 40 professionals in Leinster, the average wage of the players in the Premiership would frighten some people. Mm. It's not near as big as people think. Mm. What they're actually doing for their money on average, the average rugby player that he's getting, I'm telling you... I don't know whether you do it. It's actually not that well paid. It's not.
Just on the other two games in action then, I haven't got them priced up here at the moment, but you're essentially going to get an odds-on price about both of the Irish teams. They're both in a really, really good position. That's Leinster and Ulster. Leinster will be no sort of price to win this game against Wasps. You'll have to be looking at the handicap, which
Ulster
will probably be
travelling to Leicester Tigers.
That's it. Ulster have done themselves a huge bit of credit, beating Racing in the last game as well. And again, we talked, I think I said to you, I thought Racing were maybe a try better team than Ulster, and look, I'm proven wrong. Happy to be proven wrong. Glad to see Ulster doing the business. Those two games should be a little bit of procession. Ulster and Leinster probably do it, but Munster, Exeter is where the game's at this weekend. Mm. Essentially a playoff for that top spot. Exeter know what's needed of them.
Mm. And speaking of the playoffs, we'll move on to the NFL. Bernard, It's a big man cave Sunday for you, isn't it?
You have a good memory.
Yeah. We've Kansas City Chiefs against New England Patriots, which is going to be unbelievable in the AFC Championship game. And in the NFC, New Orleans Saints against the LA Rams.
Shane, first of all, I actually never told my family I came out with this live.
The man cave stuff.
The magic. But they found out somehow, and they actually... They weren't overly happy, put it that way. But I remember tweeting one night, I tweeted when I was watching the American football, to make sure you lock the doors, get a bottle of wine, put the feet up and watch the American football. And I'll be doing it this weekend. I'll tell you what, I said it last week and I said it strongly about, I know you disagreed, Brady and the Patriots.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, it's written. Their name is written all over it.
All over the Super Bowl?
Yes.
7-2 for them to win it out right now. They've shortened up again, yeah. You can still get 7-2.
I couldn't call it at all between any of the four teams yet.
No.
At this stage.
But Kansas, you just get
home is big now. It's big. Home is big.
Arrowhead, yeah.
You just feel, though, I said it last week even, that inevitability that the Patriots are getting to the final. Whether they win it, I don't know. But
well, like Brady against Mahomes, the GOAT against the kid. And like Mahomes has been unbelievable this year. Do you watch this at all, Rob?
I don't.
Oh, you're missing out in a big way.
His interviews have been stunning. Mahomes.
What about Brady?
Oh, he's been brilliant. What about honest up front?
What about Brady?
You could just close your eyes and you could print
him last week. Everyone thinks we suck. Nobody does.
It's the galvanized.
Are you Brian Cody in disguise?
Bernard Flynn certainly doesn't.
Huh?
Bernard Flynn certainly doesn't think you suck.
No, I tell you, the experience, what? They've won a couple and they've lost, the three of the last four Super Bowls they've competed in. Some experience.
But it's their eighth consecutive AFC Championship game. And like, a lot of us come from GA background, whereby Kilkenny making 15 Leinster finals or Dublin the same in a row is not that big a deal. But everyone in America is always flabbergasted by making eight in a row. But they have lost three in a row on the road when they've got to the final as well. And they are here, and they're against probably the most explosive offense in the game, Bernard. So you'd have to give Kansas a very good chance.
Listen, they're probably slight favourites in the betting. I haven't seen it, but I'd say home advantage are slight favourites. But the expectation from what I'm reading and looking and listening at the American football on the programmes, there's huge expectation in Kansas. It's massive. How the young quarterback will deal with it, how they'll deal with it at home, it brings its own pressure. But I was just listening during the week, and there was a piece on the programme about this coming weekend. And people don't actually realise everything is against every single thing that the, you know, American football stands for, and the way they organise their fixtures, the picks, the drafts is against the team that's doing well the previous year. Everything is against to turn you upside
if
down.
If you're the worst team, you get
correct.
The first pick.
But
the
even
next year
if you had easy fixture list, you get a hard one. Everything is an obstacle, and that's why I'm saying the Patriots. I just think there's something about them. I'm not saying I'm the biggest fan either. The arrogance that's there with Brady and all that end of it. But if they beat Kansas, they won't be beaten in a final. Absolutely no. Not
Bill
this time.
Belichick, their legendary coach. What's said about him is he always finds, like, he changes up his team from week to week. Like, last week they played the LA Chargers and they made them look like a joke. And they've been
Chargers were terrible.
They were terrible, but he always just finds a way to unbalance a team. It's very, very strange. He adapts his team and their approach.
There's freshness there, Shane. I'm telling you, he's looking at the bigger picture too.
How would Spygate go down in something like that? They've had the Flake Gate. Would Spygate work out?
They've guys employed full-time speech therapists, whatever. Lip reading. That's what they do over there. Right. That's all that goes on the whole time.
Beals the teams. Take a lesson from that.
And yeah, that's why the coaches always hold their play Incredible. Card over their faces. And you see the Premiership players now holding them hands over them. Oh, it's so annoying, so arrogant. Don't care what you're saying. I'd say it's stupid anyway. But when they met earlier this season, the Pats beat the Chiefs 43-40. And now that was at home. So we could have a very high-scoring game. That Kansas offense is unbelievable. We've talked about Mahomes. We've mentioned Tyreek Hill many times. Mm. Travis Kelce as well is probably the best tight end in the game as well. So I just don't see how over the course of the game the Pats can keep out the Chiefs. So I'm going with the Chiefs all the way.
What's
here.
What's the betting, Chief?
Well, I'll give you one before I give you the straight-up betting. New England Patriots, 1-6 points is 3-1. So to nick it, you're getting a good bit of value there. Patriots are 27-20 in the money line with the Chiefs at 8-13, and there's 3 points in the spread.
So Pat's 1-6 is 3-1.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's hard to walk away from, Bernard. Surely you're all over that.
It's a great bet. I'd actually go a little bit more conservative myself. I would go 27-20, I think, for Patriots to win. I think that's the bet for me.
Rob has nothing to say on this. Just the other game then, New Orleans Saints at home to the LA Rams. I was in New Orleans once. Well, I was in LA as well. But New Orleans, cool little city. Very cool. And we all know about the Superdome and how that was, during Hurricane Katrina, that put up a load of homeless people and all that kind of stuff. So the city is very connected with that stadium.
A lot of the players as well, weren't they? A lot of the players were very much involved in sort of
and a few years
out.
Later, they went on and won the Super Bowl as well, which was huge. But the Rams lost there earlier this year, so they're prepared for the wall of sound that you meet when you're in there. And we even saw last week how important it was that every time you have the ball and you're away to New Orleans, just the crowd, it's deafening and you can't communicate with your teammates. So yeah, I wouldn't give the Rams a huge shot here. Probably
I wouldn't give them any chance.
Would you not? No. Like, I'd give them a chance, Ari, because they've got some good weapons like Todd Gurley and CJ Anderson running the ball. So that takes out the communication to some degree, that you're not as reliant on it as you would be when you're passing the ball. What are the odds, Declan?
On the money line, you've got the Saints at 4-7, the Rams at 29-20, and then there's 3.5 points in the money line, or in the spread, I should say.
Do you give them much chance, the Rams?
Do you know what? No, I think the Saints go through this one. I think the Patriots go through the other one. And I think the Patriots beat the Saints in the Super Bowl at 11-2.
I'm in agreement with that man from Ladbrokes.
11-2, Patriots to beat New Orleans Saints in the Super Bowl.
Wouldn't rule out the Rams fully, but I'd love to see Chiefs against the Saints in the final.
Is that 11-2 now for the Patriots to beat the
Patriots
Saints
to beat the Saints in the final, 11-2?
Get on. Before Shane, you take it. That's one of my bets.
No.
Please stay away. Stay away. Stay away.
No. I don't know. I think Breeze will have it. He wasn't unbelievable against the Eagles last week. He has some good targets like Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara as his running back. But he's going to have a couple of guys that are brilliant pass rushers from the Rams side, who are the guys that are going to try and chase him down, and Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald as well. So they'll be after him all day. So I wouldn't be writing off the Rams.
Just on the mention of the of Drew Brees, MVP, 47-25. He's very short. Is there anyone you could maybe...
Well, Mahomes.
Yeah.
5,000 yards.
11-4 for Mahomes to be the MVP. He's not still skinny enough.
Yeah. And who else is in the running there?
Who else? Who would be third in that list?
Brady.
Of course he is. 15-4, and then it's 4-1 or bigger the rest.
Yeah. Is Jared Goff in that list as well?
He's next down, 4-1.
Yeah. So that's the NFL. Can't wait for that. Might head over to the man cave, actually. I'll see you over at the man cave.
No single lads allowed. No single men allowed. Unless you have a good bottle of wine.
I don't. I'll be relying on you. I'll come in with the two hands swinging. Rob, we'll move on to the racing. This is your chance to shine. You were at Leopardstown, were you?
I was there yesterday. There was a launch for the Dublin Racing Festival, the second Dublin Racing Festival. Last year's was a huge success. Seven of the horses that ran went on to win at Cheltenham. It was 8 grade ones. It's on now in just over 2 weeks' time. It was great. It's a huge sort of fixture now in the race.
It's going to be brilliant. I'm absolutely dying for it, I have to say. It's going to be an absolutely cracking weekend. Quick question for you. Where was Willie Mullins?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Look, I mean,
because we saw the panel of...
We were sort of talking amongst ourselves, and like, you can sort of understand that Willie Mullins was meant to be at it and he never turned up.
Was he? Yeah, he was actually meant to be booked right.
He was meant to be there. Yeah, he was meant to be there. He didn't turn up. But I mean, these lads are dealing with a huge amount of horses. Like, for Willie Mullins to take... It would have taken him over 3 hours to come up and back from Dublin. A couple of hours then to do all the media stuff. He's this coming up. He's Cheltenham coming up. I mean, it's great to talk to him and everything else, but you can understand from his side of things.
Did he have anyone from the yard there, though?
No.
Can
I ask you a question? I saw Brian Flanagan, who's a sports editor, tweet the other day that he had had 25 losing favourites since St. Stephen's Day. 5 winning favourites in the same period, but he's still having one of his best seasons. But that's an incredible amount of favourites to be losing now, isn't it?
Just actually since we've been on air, Ruby has been talking about this, and he's basically saying you could argue there have been disappointments, but it's more reflective of what we're running and the ground they're running on.
Yeah,
I think it is worth mentioning the ground is probably the quickest it has ever been for this time of year. And it was actually meant to be a gallop at Leopardstown yesterday, but the conditions were too quick.
Which is the same for everyone, isn't it?
It is the same for everyone, yeah.
Some prefer that ground and some don't. The likes of Jessie Harrington, she was talking yesterday and she ruled a bunch of names out of going to the Leopardstown, to the Dublin Racing Festival, because her horses need a bit of give in the ground generally.
The thing about it as well is it's only January. I know the Dublin Racing Festival is massive, but the three main festivals of the year are Cheltenham's the first up, then you've Aintree and then you've Punchestown. Like, there's so much to come after Cheltenham. Another thing Ruby was saying as well, he said, look, a horse's price isn't always reflective of the chances. There's no bookmaker going to overprice a Willie Mullins runner. So Mullins' horses are going to be a lot shorter than if it was anyone else.
If it's a 50-50, they're going to be called favourite, is basically what you're saying.
Pretty much, yeah.
I was in Newcastle race course over the weekend. I was over in Newcastle for a stag. There wasn't a sinner at the race course at all.
You didn't see Lee Griffiths. He was there a couple of weeks ago gambling, even though he's not playing football.
I didn't see him. Not willing to say
wasn't
too
part
much
of the
on stack. That.
No, Shane, what was Newcastle like? Was there any man caves?
There were booze caves everywhere.
Yeah.
It's actually a great city.
It's some city.
It's lovely city.
Went into some nightclub called Flares. Well, it's pub/nightclub as well. They had Westlife pumping out. The people were responding well, I have to say. Sleeve tattoos going
anyone
around is, everywhere.
Did you feel
Newcastle?
Did you feel old in a nightclub, Shane?
No.
No?
No, no. Jesus, okay. It was much older. Actually, there was all cross sections, all demographics of society in there. There was people 30 years older than me, there was people 15, I'd say 20 years younger than me as well. So everyone just piling in and horsing the booze out. And the thing, what is it with barmen and service industry in England at all? They are not able to throw stuff out to you quickly. Mm. Standing up at the bar for half an hour and there was probably two people
I've
in front of me.
I've noticed that myself, yeah.
And very frustrating. Yeah. Anyway, now, are you happy with that answer, Bernard?
I did text you and you didn't reply.
Yeah, well, look.
Looking back on yesterday, I suppose.
Who would commit to text with you?
Talking out of it.
Yeah.
From yesterday, I mean, listening to the trainers and that, I think Sir Eric sounds like Joseph O'Brien's probably best chance of a winner at Cheltenham. Whittler, okay. Richborg, they seem to be his two sort of main horses.
At Cheltenham or the festival?
At Cheltenham. Oh, okay, I think right. At Cheltenham and probably at the festival, at the Dublin Racing Festival as well. Noel Mead was very sweet and Sir Eric as well. And it looks like Road to Respect is going to run in the Irish Gold Cup. Was obviously a bit unlucky over Christmas, slipping twice. I think he's 7-2 now. Like, is there an argument for taking that? Because a lot of the horses that are entered in this race mightn't turn up. Presenting Percy mightn't turn up. Like Mona Lee mightn't turn up. Sizing John.
Yeah.
No, I think 7-2. Like, you think he went off? Was it 9-4?
Yeah, around that.
7-2 is a decent.
It's as you said. With the concern, we've had Johnny Ward in talking about this and getting on to global warming. We've talked about the ground so much this season, more than ever before. And I was of the opinion earlier in the year that this is a good thing because some of the big names are going to have no choice but to run up against each other. We've not had that at all. No. We've had the opposite. We've had, as we talked about, Lorena's kind of races last week. Shattered Love is the latest one I see going to sidestep. So, yeah, you're going to... It's unfortunate because it's going to be a cracking festival, but we are going to lose out on some
big
names.
And we've no idea who is going to turn up. Mm-hmm. The good news is there is rain forecast, but the thing is, is there enough rain is the other question. But it looks like Appleshade's definitely going to be running in the Irish Champion Hurdle. I don't know. I mean, I know they've always said that the Mayor's race is the target at Cheltenham, but surely if Appleshade wins this race doing handstands, they seriously have to think about the Champion Hurdle at Cheltenham. Is it worth taking 10-1?
I wouldn't put you off. Yeah. I wouldn't put you off.
Well, I mean, if she goes for Champion Hurdle, she'd be favour. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what I mean? She'll be shorter than Boo.
Yeah,
there.
I'd say again. Johnny Ward talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Hang on for your non-runner, no bet. It's probably not too far away. You get a little bit of value.
You're gonna get a lot. It'll be a lot shorter. Than what you're gonna get now.
What about this weekend then? At Ascot, the 3:35 on Saturday, the Clarence House Chase. What do you reckon here, Rob?
Clarence House Chase. Oh, this is
I'll give you the betting first just to affirm Rob's opinion. Altior 1-8, Fox Norton 13-2, Diego de Charmel 16-1. Three horses have turned up. No one to sell.
Look, I mean, Altior, I think, is at this stage is the only cert for Cheltenham.
4-9 for the Champion Chase at the moment.
Like, it's facing a small field here. It's going to be facing a small field at Cheltenham as well. It's an absolute machine. It could be better. Is he better than Sprinter Sacra? Is he the best 2 miler we've ever seen?
I wouldn't say that. No, I wouldn't go that far. But he could be. Unfortunately, he's rocked up in a few of these kind of contests, and that's where he'd be asking. Yeah. He's 4-9 for the Champion Chase, as I mentioned. Just as Undersoul's not running, but look, 16-1 for the Champion Chase, 10-1 for the Ryanair. If you do like Undersoul's chances at some point, what can you say about this race? Bar maybe talking a little bit about Fox Norton, not run since 2017 and pulled up in the King George. The Tizzard's very positive about him. He's a dual Grade One winner, and he wasn't beaten far in the Champion Chase 2017. Again, you can get this one, Fox Norton. If he puts up a good showing here, that will probably be the underlying part of this race. 14-1 Fox Norton for the Ryanair, 20-1 for the Champion Chase at the moment.
It's just it's all about Altior, isn't it?
It's a surefire win, essentially.
Like, who's going to back the one?
Do you know what's strange about Altior running here, though? Nicky Henderson talking about this one. It doesn't need to run at all. Mm. He's just sending it. And you wouldn't have seen that at all, I would have said, this season.
So why then?
Look, it's there to be won. There's good money to be won in it. He can take part. There's not really much opposition. He shouldn't be under too much pressure. He can win probably at a canter and get a big chunk of prize money and be fresh before Cheltenham.
Money for gems, though. Mm. The Haydock at 2:40, the new one hurdle, which is in
the new one this retiring. Is an interesting one. I mean, Brain Power, like it really looked enjoyed going back over hurdles last time. Going over fences just didn't really work out for him at all. Silver Streak was second on that occasion. The weights are more in his favour here, but I mean, looking at the betting for the Champion Hurdle Cheltenham, Brain Power 16-1, Silver Streak's 50-1. If Brain Power is going to be in contention for the Champion Hurdle, it's going to have to win this, isn't it?
It is. We're just redoing the price at the moment, but you should get the two of them around the top of the betting together. I wouldn't have said too far off Silver Streak.
9-4, 11-4 in.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be too far off that for Silver Streak or Brain Power. I'd be leaning towards Brain Power for that. I know Silver Streak's on better terms, and he's been sort of slowly improving, but you look at the Grade 3s he's taken part in, he's not won any of them. It would be a push to say he's going to you know, go well as a short price favourite for a grade two here against some pretty tough opposition. I know they're saying a strong Gallop would help, so if he gets that, that might massively kick him on a bit, you know?
I'd be the same, yeah. Brain power, definitely. I mean, I thought he really looked like he enjoyed it the last day, and I think, yeah, if he's 9-4 here, it's a fair enough price.
There's a few that reoppose him behind the likes of Mahead and Western Rider. Again, brain power for me should have it over them. But I'll tell you one that caught the eye, Rob, was Pink Shoe. And he's going to be sort of second string, I would have thought, for Colin Tizard here, but a big price. I think it was around 16s, might have shortened up a little since then. He missed most of last year. The Yards always thought of him as a pretty top class two miler, and, you know, grade one winner at Aintree, if you look back far enough. Wouldn't say it was the best contest now, won at Aintree, but yeah, I just, you know, you've got Vision to Flow in there. I will say I'm not Vision to Flow's biggest fan, so Pink Shoe would probably be a second stringer to him. But just at the prices, it looks a very open contest. I wouldn't be ruling out most of the field here. The likes of Klein and a few more might need a bit more give, so I wouldn't be surprised if they drift or maybe don't go at all. But Pink Shoe is a big enough price. I'd just be interested to see how he goes.
Just one more I'm going to put up as well in a handicap chase at the weekend. It's at Ascot on Saturday. Bellamy the Pictons for Venetia Williams, who's been on fire so far this year. He's been off for a long time. I think since about last November or December, he was last seen finishing second to Asian Patiently, but she's in great form and there's been money for him. He's 8-1 now from 12s. I think that's the 3 o'clock race at Ascot on Saturday.
Any other tips before we move on from racing?
I thought we'd just brief mention for the Tiestas, yeah, if you want to have a look ahead to that, because that will actually be on the next time we're recording, so we won't get too much of a chance to build up to the Tiestas. A cracking race at Goran Park on the Thursday the 24th. I don't know if you have any selections here, Rob.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I actually remember this race very well last year because the entire Mirror office backed the winner. There was a huge gamble on Monbeg Notorious. I think he was with 7-8-1 in the morning and he won at 7-2. Let's just say someone that knew the horse
very good.
Gave
very
information good. Like away it, in a well-known like Dublin nightclub to someone. I think the interesting one here is David Pipe's two horses down to running it. Now, yeah, if they make it or not is another thing. One was second, Rams de Tilly was second in the Welsh National over Christmas. Much different race here and probably needs soft ground, I think. And then Dandelion went off favour for a handicap at Punchestown last year, was pulled up, won a handicap at Haydock just before Christmas, but again he might need the soft ground. But look, if either of those come over, Pipe's a very shrewd operator and he will definitely not be sending them over to make
the
numbers.
Yeah, no, fair shout. It's about 8-1 any second now is top of the betting at the moment. Then you've got Blazer Invitation Only, Solomon Grundy and Total Recall on 10s and 12s or bigger the rest. I might be silly going in for this one, but I really like Total Recall. I know he had an awful year last year. There's no way you can work around it. But he was some reasonable form back at Leopardstown in the Savills Chase. And think of how highly he was rated overall. He was in the Gold Cup. He was in the Irish Gold Cup. He wasn't miles off in the betting for either of those. I know there's a question about the Mullins Yard at the moment as well. Yeah. But look, we're talking next week. He might have had a couple of winners at this point. He's 10-1. I wouldn't be piling him right now, but I certainly wouldn't be too far off. You probably won't be getting much bigger than 10-1, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I think he's a decent bet. I actually looked at him myself. Look, Monbeg Notorious romped home in this last year, but he's a lot higher in the weights. And I think for that reason, you'd probably have to oppose him.
We'll move on to the GA. So we're going to look at the outrights for both the league in hurling and football. But Bernard, the O'Byrne Cup Final, Dublin against Westmeath. Dublin's, for all intents and purposes, their C team beat your Mead team, which would likely be what we'd imagine that Andy McEntee will put out during the league. What was it like watching Mead lose to Dublin's C team?
The game was a brilliant game of football. I really enjoyed it. The atmosphere, there was a huge crowd in Parnell Park. In the context for a standalone game, it was brilliant entertainment. Mm. The rules had, unlike the following day when it was up at Armagh and Tyrone, had no bearing on the game. It's the way the game was played. Two teams very evenly matched. The actual realisation for me, Shane, that the Dublins, I think, are being kind. If you take a team of 15, it's probably closer to their 4 team. That's being honest with you. Or as a journalist said to me during the week, the 3rd and a half team type of thing. Irrespective, I think we went all out to win it. Mm-hmm. We've been training hard for 2 or 3 months. But there is no shame in that. This is why Colin O'Rourke's actual argument is justified to a point where Dublin could field 3 or 4 county teams, really good county teams. Yeah. But that aside, I'm being honest, as a Mead person, and I went up there and they tried hard, they gave it everything. We had our strongest squad. I think there's probably, could be 10, 12 of the championship team play the other night. We trained for 3 months. This Dublin team had trained for a few weeks. That is, it's fairly hard to take, Shane, to be honest with you. But it is where we are.
I'll tell you, last year, a year ago, Paddy O'Rourke, the goalkeeper, he opted off the panel because he's like, why would you put this much effort in for whatever it was, 10 or 11 months of the year, year after year after year, to have zero chance of winning that? And I think that's happening throughout Leinster and throughout Ireland, where teams are like, well, look, the competition structure means we're going to be cannon fodder for somebody, unless they change it around to have senior, junior and intermediate, for example, or some sort of a different tiered system. I agree with lads walking around. Why would you?
Well, the only thing on Paddy, and I know sort of Paddy just finished and he came out with that statement straight away. Paddy played for Ireland against Australia, etc. Paddy played, you know, for 8 or 9 years. Why did he do it for 8 or 9 years? That was the question. And the timing of that didn't, I think, help anybody.
I ghosted that column for him as well. So, like, I fully knew what was going on in his head, wrote it, and then gave him a sign-off on it before it went out. So
I didn't think much of the statement whatsoever, personally.
I thought he was on the ball, because it's what a lot of players think, that the competition structure is letting them down. You are basically, to some degree, your life has been dictated by county manager and team, and you have to behave as they tell you for 10 months a year. You're putting in that much effort, and at the end of it, you haven't a hope.
Yeah, well, Meath are going into Division 2 with a hope. That is their
league.
The league is huge, Shane. I'm telling you, the value in the league over the last couple of years, it's been better than the championship until the latter stage of the All-Ireland final, semi-final, whatever. The league has been way better value because it's a fair competition. The games, Meath are playing Tipperary in the first round. That is their All-Ireland final.
So again, you're actually feeding back into what I'm saying, is there's actually a structure that makes sense, the league. The championship has been dire to watch for a number of years in football, bar the very last game when Dublin play Mayo, for example.
But Paddy has to respect, and Paddy, who above anybody else, if you've 30 guys dedicated and committed to the cause, they mightn't have a chance of winning All-Ireland or Leinster, but I respect the effort. I watched some young Meath players the other night. You couldn't ask any more than the effort they give. Are they going to win All-Ireland or Leinster? Absolutely not. Does that mean they down tools all of them? No. In my opinion.
But I think Paddy's right to say what's in his head. If that's what you think, and a lot of people think
you're wrong. I totally disagree with you, Shane, straight up. And I know a lot of former players, if everyone took Paddy's attitude, Paddy didn't say that when he won a Leinster. Paddy won a Leinster.
2010, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, surely that should be a message to the GAA to say, okay, players are now walking away in their droves. They're going to start going to other sports. We need to sort out the structure.
That's a different...
And if players like Paddy don't talk up, then you're going to end up continuing on
Shane,
this
the biggest
horrible
problem
structure
with
we
the
have.
GAA at the moment is, and forget about the rules and all that crap.
Yeah,
the biggest single thing facing the GAA is the people walking away. Because of the structures, I get that. Now, it wasn't just quite, the statement that came out wasn't just quite that. It was, you know, I thought it could have been worded differently at the time. The structures are wrong for the championship. The structures are perfectly correct for the league. If you win, you promote, you come down. It's fair. The games will be super. I can't wait for them. Am I looking forward to the first 2 thirds of the championship? Absolutely not. But Croke Park, people are leaving. They're thinking of America now at the end of the league. Half the players are London, wherever it may be. That's what a lot of these guys, James Dolan, who I watched last weekend, left 10 days before the championship. He's captain of Westmead, played brilliant last week, is gone. That is the biggest thing facing Croke Park. I actually respect that. But I don't respect somebody coming out with a statement that doesn't respect the effort young players are actually trying to give.
Well, without people like Paddy talking up, the structure will remain the same. So,
one of my bets, can I just come at this? I was asking, here's one for you now. I'm going to throw this out. I don't normally give a GAA bet that I think is going to go, a real good one. But I've come up with a couple of good ones. This, I think Westmead, believe it or not, are going to beat Dublin the weekend. If you look for 11-4, 3-1, you'll get 3-1 if you want it. And I think, I'm telling you now, Dublin, as good as they were, yes, there's some very good players. This team is beatable. It's on Friday night, which is unusual, on TG Carr.
Dublin's C team is live on TV.
Westmead's first team is live on TV. That's great exposure for them.
It is, Shane, for them, but isn't it incredible that someone's C team is live on TV?
They won it 2 years ago. They hammered the first team from Kildare. This is what we're dealing with at the moment. The problem with it is they are, but Westmead, this is big for Jack Cooney. He has them going well. They're organised. The reason you brought up is, I think there's a bit of value for our listeners. 3-1 Westmead, in around that 11-4. You can get it. and I'd be on it. And I hope to God Dublin C team are beaten.
We'll get the league odds from you now, Declan, as right. well. But I just think, you know, I'd be thinking about it as he's just calling out the odds. But we're a week out from the league, and the GPA have released a statement, well, to all its members, which was straight away forwarded on to me by a player, whereby most people are unhappy with an awful lot of rules, and especially the hand pass, the three hand pass rule, as I mentioned last week.
Total joke, Shane.
A guy I know, he had to take a pot shot because he couldn't just hand pass the ball beside him and put the guy straight in. That's how silly the rules are. But we're a week out from the league and we don't know what rules are going to be used yet, so it's an absolute joke. So Declan, can we just get the prices from
him? Can I just ask you before we do, there's one rule gradually that seems to be coming in, which I'm a fan of, the penalty shootout. Are you for or against that? I find...
It was there last week. I was at it. Yeah. In Parnell Park.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable entertainment.
Yeah.
And if there's a decision to be... Now, the only thing, there's no extra time. I felt the 10 minutes could have been ran. Mm-hmm. Each side. The teams... It was a great second. They were going at it hammer and tongs. As a match... For the neutral, it was brilliant if you were there.
It's one of the most obvious rule changes to introduce to something.
Our
like
penalties
this
were replays shocking. And Dublin's penalties were terrible.
But it's something that adds excitement to nearly every competition it's brought into. I don't
Mayo
know why.
Mayo goal last week, super again.
Yeah.
And then people go out and say, if you play the two sets of 10 minutes extra time, player welfare and all this should be a replay next week. But if you keep playing replays, then that causes fixture congestion. It's more problems. And that GPA thing, 90% of players feel the hand passes had a negative impact. 78% of managers agree. And 11% say neither a positive nor a negative. So you talk about 1% say it's a positive.
Yeah.
Sin bin, 58% positive. Offensive mark, 58% positive. Further, 21% neither negative nor positive. Kickouts, 45% are positive about that. What do you think of that one, Bernard?
It's okay. It's no real bearing on the game. Shane, just on a quick one before we move on.
Yeah.
The single biggest change that we could make to the game, the single biggest change, and I want to say it now, and this is one of the most serious things I will ever say, honestly. The rules and this, that, and they're looking in the wrong place. The only Dublin's supremacy with a magnificent team, that we can do very little about. Like Kilkenny and the hurling, you could do very little about, right? Mm. There wasn't the same outcry or pouring against Kilkenny as there is against Dublin, right? And there were twice, they've won 10, 12, whatever it is. The biggest change in Gaelic football would be that we call out now those managers, not them all, and coaches that have destroyed the game with the negativity and the style of play that has been a cancer through the game. That is the biggest single problem we have in the game at the moment, without a shadow of a doubt.
I'd say no back pass to goalkeeper would change a lot of that, because teams would be rewarded for pressing
up.
I
said it, Shane, to you only a couple of months ago, that if you go back by the 45, you cannot. Last week...
That's hard to police, but I'd say if you can't go back to the goalkeeper, you're rewarded for pushing.
Last weekend, I watched Tyrone and Derry Ratted. It was non-stop up in Armagh, and that is killing it. But overall, call out, clubs need to start calling out, and counties, managers that set up 15 behind the ball non-stop, I think they should be called out and it shouldn't be accepted.
We have a week to sort this out before we kick on, so let's have a look at the outright betting for the Division 1. Dublin 8-15, only team likely to disrupt them by the looks of it. Kerry at 6s, 15-2. Tyrone, Mayo at 8s, 10-1 about Galway. Monaghan 12s and 50-1 the rest.
Yeah, Cavan and Roscommon 50-1 each wouldn't be going near much.
No, your relegation betting is more likely there.
Mayo are normally around 4th and 5th ever since Horan took over for the 2011 season. I think that's when he started. They've always been 4th, 5th, flirting with relegation. Kerry 6-1. Still a bit of transition there.
Is the most exciting team, I suppose, to look at in that list, Kerry? Just with a sort of new era, a few
Peter Keane, who knows what we'll get?
Yeah.
You see, are they going to be competitive this year, or is he setting up for 2 or 3 years' time? I don't know what they're going to be about.
And is he targeting championships
as well?
But I think there's plenty to talk about when you look at the team. Is the sort of talent there replacing some of them? I've seen Donegal Walsh talking a little bit, saying the talent is there, naming a few players.
He's always going to say it, absolutely.
But I think it'll be interesting to, of all the teams you're going to watch here, what you're going to be judging, what you're going to be learning about them. I think Kerry's one that their games will be entertainment of some
sort.
The
two teams that I would look at as having a chance of causing a bit of surprise. Now, I think each way is a third of the odds, I think. I would be looking at Galway at 10-1 and Monaghan at 12-1. I wouldn't really be looking at Kerry. I wouldn't necessarily look at Tyrone either.
Value, I think you're spot on there.
Dublin, I think, are going to win.
That obviously put it to Dublin last year, the two you mentioned there. But spoken to our GAA trader earlier today, and don't have a proper price for this, but you might get on request. I'd ask him roughly off the top of his head a tissue price for Dublin to go unbeaten in this. And you're talking about 9-4, which I don't think is too bad at all. Now, that's not an official price, so you can't quote me on that, unfortunately. But you're looking at around that for Dublin to go unbeaten.
I think Monaghan might turn them over.
You think so, yeah?
Yeah, in the first round of the league. I actually do.
We'll look more in depth at the fixtures next week when we're just about coming into the first round. But just for now, same with the hurling as well. We'll just look at the outright there as well. Galway 7-2 are leading the betting.
There, Andy, I think we touched a little bit on this last week because we talked up Tip, or you talked up Tip, I should say.
I talked down Tip. Actually.
No, Shane did not talk up Tip last week.
7-2 Galway, 4-1 Cork, and Tip 5-1 Limerick, 6-1 Clare, 15-2 Kilkenny and Waterford, and 14s are bigger the rest.
Yeah, you see, I kind of had mini warning signs about Tipperary in the last couple of weeks, having watched them in the Munster League, and I know it's such early days. So I saw mid December. Beat Limerick, but I was very unhappy with the way the team was set up and how they used the ball. Lost by 10 points to Clare last weekend, conceded 4 goals, apparently oceans of space left around the full back line, which was the issue last year. Again, I know they are training like demons down in Tipperary, so I expect Tip to be far more competitive this year and next year, but I think the warning signs are there.
So you wouldn't take 4-1?
I wouldn't take 4-1. But at the same time, Tipperary have got the quality of hurlers that... Right, so Liam Sheedy, if we look at his first reign, what he does is he gets the team really, really intense and fired up. And he puts the right players in the right position, or he certainly did back then. But they were prone to the odd flop of a performance. I think the same thing could happen again. Are they going to be up for the Munster League? Are they trialling out a few players that are probably going to be dropped from the panel by the time we come to the league? Yeah. So I think Tip are capable of beating anybody on any single day just out of pure quality when they are fired up, because hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work. Bernard, we've heard it for years.
Absolutely.
And I think Tip have the talent. So if they're fired up, they're going to beat most teams on most days.
I read his quotes after the match. I think... And you did touch on something last week. I did say, I think Johnny as well, it was early to be maybe overcritical. I'm not. You weren't. You were being constructive with regards to Tip. I would say they'd be very, very disappointed to the extent, by all accounts, I only seen clips. I was up doing the commentary, listening to the clips coming in and out. They were actually destroyed for pace, fitness levels. I know they've a workload, probably heavy training, but the way they were carved open, and do you know what happens now at this stage? If that keeps going in the early part of the season, it does dent confidence.
It does. No manager goes out to lose by 10 points in his first year.
And some of the players might be saying, have we got it anymore? Is our number up in some of these players? That's the big thing.
There are a lot of players with a lot of miles on the clock. And look, I would always say that Tip have the quality, but there might be some players gone past their best, and you can't afford to.
That's
too
the big
many,
question.
Can't
That's
afford
the big
to have too many players that aren't animals out there as well. So
if we had to have a fancy from the both of you then, or even a dark horse to get involved, where would you be thinking
for
at this
the
point?
League? Oh, yeah, it's so tough to call. Like Kilkenny are reigning champions, 15-2, I think is a little bit long on them. So I think there's value there, especially each way at half of the prices, or sorry, a third of the price as well. Maybe Galway 7-2 as well, not bad.
You can even get 11-2 about Kilkenny in 1A.
I think Galway.
Well, so.
I think you'll see a bit of hunger after last year and that. There, I think there's definitely a point to prove. I mean, Canning coming on last week with a different number on the back of his jersey to take that clip and put the ball over the bar. Now, by all accounts, he should have hammered Dublin. For a team to actually maybe surprise a few people, I think Dublin.
Yeah, well, look.
I think Dublin.
Thing is, Matty Kenny doesn't have every player that he wants available yet. And as time goes on, that will happen. I think he's going to have a good setup in the team. If he has everyone fit, he's got 6 brilliant backs and arguably the best backs in the country. If he has all his forwards available, he's got an excellent varied forward line with pace. Probably doesn't have a marquee TJ Reid / Seamus Callaghan / Joe Canning. That's probably the only place where he's lacking a little bit. And with Kula, I mean, with a couple of All-Irelands, you've obviously got a team that's got weapons and more weapons than other club teams. He won't have more weapons than other...
Why has he not got your man playing hurling?
Conor Callaghan, sure. How can he get
him? I know
that,
I'm only saying, but that's... When you think, where else would that be allowed to take place?
Well, I mean, it is a football county.
Jim Gavin, like Joe Smith, he's ruling the roost.
How far would you fancy Dublin then? You've got them at about 11-2 for 1B, or they're about, I think I said, 14-1. You'd probably be thinking each way.
Just the league, 11-2.
for 1B. Yeah, 1B.
Not bad. That is not
Dublin 11 to 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shane, this value,
it's
I think.
Not bad. I still think Galway are in there as well. Mm. Wexford are in there as well. Mm. So it'll be a tough one.
If you join us in the shops, in the Republic of Northern Ireland shops the next couple of weeks, there's going to be a few countdown boosts as well, sort of daily. So do check in with us for more details.
Sorry, Wexford have gone up to they're up in 1A. Mm. So you're talking Dublin, Galway and Waterford are in fact the team that I mentioned.
2-1 Waterford, if you prefer that.
Bits of the week, quickly, lads.
I'll jump in with some football. We got a couple of good Premier League ones in last week. Again, we didn't actually mention, but I think we could see the end of Claude Puel very, very soon. I think Wolves, both teams to score at 9-2 is huge when you consider Wolves are a really good, solid team. Probably did well to only be beaten 3-0 by City. And yeah, I think this could be the end of Puel. They're not happy with him at all.
I think for the week that's in it, I'm going to go with Leeds 29-20 to win away to Stoke.
Lovely.
I think they'll continue their march on to the Premier League.
Yeah. Listen, if you can believe me and the Patriots, and Shane is with me on this one, I think if you look at it, I think there's a double.
Declan's
Patriots,
with you.
Declan's
yeah,
with you.
Well, Shane's not with me. 27-20 to Patriots. And if you believe in that, double up on them to beat the Saints in the final at 11-2. GA1 for the GA listeners, 3-1 Westmeath to turn Dublin over. A bit of a shock. And there's two there on the soccer I actually like. And that is United to nil, 21-10, I think is a good bet. And also, I think, if you look at Arsenal and Chelsea, a draw at halftime, both teams to score 16-5.
Mm, and then just one that hasn't been touched on there. Liverpool and Crystal Palace both to score, and Liverpool to win is 2-1. I think that's a pretty nice one.
Right.
We've it all said, lads. Yeah. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify and iTunes. We'll chat to you next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.